Crime Curious is a true crime podcast that takes an in-depth look into real cases through the lens of a trained investigator and former prosecutor turned judge.
If you are sensitive to expletives, anatomical descriptions, and accurate descriptions of crime scenes, this podcast may not be suitable for you.
Have you or someone you love been a victim of a crime that's still unsolved? Crime Curious has teamed up with one of the top private investigation services in the Indiana and surrounding area. If you have listened to us long enough, you know that we do not seek out services or products that are meaningless to us or hold no real value. So you can trust us when we say that Corbett Investigations comes with decades of experience you won't find anyplace else. Corbett Investigations is run by a former homicide commander of one of the country's most successful homicide units, has put over 400 people in prison for homicide, handled over 1,100 death investigations, and solved 33 cold case murders. To be real with you, Mr. Corbett had a really difficult time telling us what we should highlight in this segment because he does not like to sound like he's bragging. Solving crimes has been his life's passion, and he has never done it for the accolades or recognition. He has a whole team behind his services that help him be so successful, as they specialize in things like bloodstain analysis, ballistics, crime scene reconstruction, and forensic pathology, just to name a few. When you contact Corbett Investigations, you talk directly with Tim Corbett. He is hands-on with every case and can travel anywhere that's needed to get the job done. Corbett Investigations prides itself on honesty, truth, feet to the ground, real investigation work, and the strength to stand up to whatever is in the way of solving the crime. Corbett Investigations specializes in complex homicide cases, sex offenses, and criminal investigations that are old and new. Tim and his team have a reputation for finding witnesses and information that others could not. Although we hope none of our listeners ever need private investigation services, if you do, we recommend contacting Corbett Investigations and mention this segment on Crime Curious for a free consultation. Contact Tim Corbett today at 574-229-8115. You can also check them out on Facebook at Corbett Investigative Services, Inc. or their email, tim@tcorbett.org. That's tim@tcorbett.org. Thanks for listening, and now on to the show. Welcome to Crime Curious. I'm Charnel.
And I'm Megan.
And we're shaking our good luck, Grease. Got the sack. She's got the bones.
There's so much shaking.
Gang's all here. So I have a very recently wrapped up Michigan case for us today. And Megan, we usually record, if not on a Sunday, you guys, we record after our day job at about 5 or 6 p.m., after work. And so today Megan comes in her beautiful outfits. She always gets to dress
up. I always dress up for you.
Under her robes. You do. It's just perfect. And she sits down and I'm like, hey, I've got a Michigan case for you today. And lo and behold, she had recently started to research it. So
I've read all about it.
Good. I'm glad because this is a case where the audience is going to want your legal input anyway. So to have this back information on it, I think will be easier for you to, you know, pull into your mind frame of
as much or little as you would like from me. I am always here.
Perfect. And it's been heavily requested. So thank you to everybody who requested it. I was intentionally waiting to present it after the last hearing, I think was the 23rd of February of this year. I prefer to do that. So it's easier for you, Megan, to be able to talk about cases because they've been completed through the justice system.
Without giving too much away, there were a couple of different convictions in this case and it was waiting for the last one to sentence to come down.
Yep. And that's why you hadn't covered it yet too, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So, all right. So this is the case of the slow, torturous murder of Timothy Ferguson, a 15-year-old Michigan boy with disabilities. Many of our Michigan listeners have requested this case and many said they were requesting it because they knew Megan and I could do the case justice. which, in case you guys don't know, is the highest compliment that we can receive as podcasters.
Gives me goosebumps every time somebody makes that request on a specific case for us, because it's a level of trust that just, it means something to you and I.
Yes, it absolutely does. These are not just cases that we cover for our own entertainment and the entertainment of others. This is a way that we can give service to keep people's memory alive and to help educate the public on how these things can happen and how to prevent them.
In a case like this, there's something about doing an honor to the victim who was so unloved in his life that we can at least love him now.
Yes.
And like throw that energy at him wherever his final resting place is.
Yep, I agree. So I would like to play a piece for you.
Ugh.
I know. It's from the prosecutor's opening statement to
the jury. Oh, I've listened to these. Is like my bedtime reading or bedtime listening, right? We're warped at people.
We are. We absolutely are.
All right.
But
let them enjoy.
The reason that I am playing this opening, and it's just a minute and 22 seconds of an opening statement that the prosecutor made to the jury, because I think it's going to set up for you all the level of depravity that we are covering today. First, though, allow me to briefly introduce the perpetrators so that you understand the names that are mentioned in the opening statement. Now, this statement was obtained from a Court TV link that is in the show notes. If you would like to watch, it's 7.5 minutes long. So if you'd like to watch all of it, I welcome that. The link is in the show notes. And this is from the December 2023 murder trial for 15-year-old Timothy Ferguson of North Shores, Michigan. His mother was 43-year-old Shanda. I always want to add an R in there.
I know.
Always. It is Shanda Vander Ark. She was charged with first-degree murder and child abuse, and the trial took place in the Muskegon County Courthouse. So here we go. I'm going to play this for you, and hopefully it's not too screamy in your ears.
And if he does that and waits 30 minutes, he can have some more slices without hot sauce. This is a child who is already essentially on death's door with his malnutrition. And his mother, the person responsible for his care and custody and well-being, is telling her other son to feed him hot sauce. This isn't the only reference to hot sauce. You're going to hear multiple references to it throughout those text messages. At one point, Timothy commits the horrendous crime of eating the crust of a burger, leftover pieces of a burger. And when she finds out, what does she tell Paul Ferguson to do? Go make him throw up. Sadly, Paul does that. Go make him throw up because he ate the crust of a burger. It's difficult to wrap your mind around the level of depraved indifference shown to Timothy Ferguson.
Okay, so now that you have an understanding a little bit, let's put together how we ended up at this murder trial to begin with, okay? Shanda Vander Ark was once Shanda Ferguson, living in Oklahoma with her then husband, Eric Ferguson. The couple had four children, Eric Jr., Paul, Millie, and of course, Timothy. With the exception of Timothy, the others are adults between the ages of 24 and 20 at this time. There were concerns in Oklahoma for abuse that's very similar to the kind of abuse we are dealing with in Timothy's case. Between 2009 and 2012, the state of Oklahoma Child Protective Services were involved with Shanda, why do I want
to? She doesn't deserve to have her name spoken
None
clearly. This is God speaking through you. Mess her name up.
I think so. I just want to call her Shitface.
Shanda.
It's just
Shitface.
Shitface Shanda. Now that I can remember.
There we go.
All right. Got it. Locked and loaded.
I have missed the days of you nicknaming murderers.
I know.
Now we have Shitface.
I really stopped doing that because I don't like, you know, I'm a firm believer
don't
that
like
what
to
you
call names.
Well,
and,
but what you put out there comes back to you. So out there somewhere, someone's calling me names, you know. So
I like to think of that as being called worse by better people. I'm okay with it.
That's
call me
true.
What you will.
So she's Shitface Shanda.
Ah,
I still can't say it right. All right. And so during her divorce from Eric Ferguson is when, in 2012, is when, I mean, Child Protective Services had been involved between 2009 and 2012, but they went through some custody battles, some difficult divorce, that sort of thing. But it was in 2012 that actually the state of Oklahoma had recommended termination of her parental rights, and they were going to be giving the children to their father, Eric. However, the termination never happened because in January 2012, she and Eric Ferguson signed an exit order from Oklahoma Juvenile Court where she waived her custody rights voluntarily prior to a formal decision to have them terminated. That happens all the time. So, Shanda Vander Ark was allowed only supervised visitation at that time for a period of 3 hours per month. Her last name at that time was still Ferguson. Instead of exercising her visitation rights, she moved 18 different times between Oklahoma and Virginia before landing in North Shores, Michigan.
That, by the way, is on the west side of Michigan, kind of nearish to Muskegon. Mm-hmm. And
or as people like to pronounce it, Muskegon.
So this is one of the times that we know how to pronounce the names in our states. And it gives you new thoughts to the adage of people in Michigan who say things like West Side's the best side. Mm-hmm. Not with people like that there.
No, not with shit-faced Shanda there. See, I got it. Nailed got it. So she remarried a man named Adam Vander Ark soon after she left Oklahoma, and the couple did have a son together. I won't be naming him. He is still a minor. Timothy Ferguson was said to have cognitive disabilities that ranged from high-functioning autism, ADHD, bipolar, and several other mental ailments. However, I'm going to put a little asterisk next to this because that was all reported by his mother, right, by Shitface Shanda. Okay, so
not necessarily any diagnoses to confirm her her own diagnoses of her child.
Not that I could find.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. If it came up in the trial, it wasn't readily available for me to access. I do know that police interviewed neighbors, and the neighbors were like, well, they seemed like a reclusive family, and all we know is that her son seemed to have disabilities.
Yeah.
Now, is that because she told them or because we actually, you know, they witnessed things?
And how many of those quote unquote disabilities were just honestly the effects of neglect, as we're going to get to?
Absolutely. Even the behavioral things, you guys, also could be an effect of neglect, attention seeking behaviors, those sorts of things. So I caution this whole disabilities thing and just say product of environment. We have alternative hypothesis there, okay? In the beginning of 2021, Eric Ferguson was struggling to appropriately handle Timothy's alleged mental illnesses, and he was considering giving up his parental rights to Oklahoma Child Protective Services.
Oh, I don't love it.
I don't either. I don't know what his mental state is like. I don't know how he was as a father, but Timothy is the youngest of their children.
He was appropriate enough to be the one given custody of the children.
Yep, in 2012.
At the time mm-hmm. that her rights were potentially going to be terminated if she didn't agree to a change in custody, mm-hmm. which we don't see a lot in Michigan, but I know it's definitely viable. If we have a neglect and abuse parent who's about to get their rights terminated and there's an appropriate parent, we don't like to intentionally bastardize a child by terminating rights to one of them. So instead, we give custody to the appropriate parent, correct, and they just only get supervised visits. Yep. So he clearly had Timothy, right, mm-hmm. at the youngest at the time. I hate that if he was having some type of issues, his thought was, I'm going to give him to the system to take care of instead of asking for help and getting it
right
from the state.
Yep. This is 9 years after their divorce. We can't discount the fact that Timothy was very young when his mother left, just was out of his life, right? And so some of these things that I'm saying are his alleged mental illnesses possibly could have just been drama.
Word.
So
I agree.
he was having a difficult time dealing with that with Timothy. What's it with me and names today?
I don't know.
Odd.
It's Tuesday.
It is. In 2021 or early 2022, I found different dates on this, so don't hold me to this like statement of fact. So it was either like January 2022 or later 2021. Shitface Shanda's husband Adam suffered a stroke that rendered him wheelchair bound. I also found information that he had passed away. At this point in time, he has passed away, but it was of leukemia. So I don't know if this stroke was part of his leukemia, you know, how that progressed. I couldn't find more information on that, but just know that he had legitimate health concerns.
That ultimately led to his death.
Yes.
At some point.
Yes. Yep. This obviously made life when he had that stroke and he was wheelchair bound. It changed everyone in the house's life, right? And so here Timothy moves in 2021, and Paul, their adult son, is living, not their adult son, Eric and Shanda's adult son, are living in the home with her husband, Adam. He has this stroke, and Adam moves in with his parents in West Olive to be taken care of. So it's 2022, and the people living in the home are 19-year-old Paul Ferguson, which is Shanda Vander Ark's adult son, 15-year-old Timothy Ferguson, her minor son, and a 7-year-old minor boy. Okay?
Okay.
So Shanda blames Adam's stroke as the catalyst for Timothy's acting out. Her entire defense rested on the points that she was disciplining Timothy and some things that she had to do in order to protect him, which is something in severe abuse cases that we hear a lot. These were disciplinary actions. I withheld all this food to protect him from overeating, blah, 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 blah. I'm full of shit.
Yeah.
That's all that is.
And let's be clear, even though people may want to argue, there's a clear difference in definition between discipline and punishment.
Absolutely.
Yep.
She also claims that her own PTSD and untreated mental health issues contributed to why she was unable to use reasonable judgment and assess that Timothy's life was in danger. She maintains that she never intended to cause him harm. Yet on June 6th, 2022, at approximately 6:37 a.m., and this is from a press release from the North Shores Police Department, officers responded to an emergency call about a suspicious death at a home located in the 4,000 block of Marshall Road in North Shores. Upon arriving at the scene, first responders trigger alert, everyone. First responders discovered the body of a teenage male who was later identified as Timothy Ferguson, lying in the basement under the stairs of the home, wrapped in a blue tarp, the kind that one would use to rake leaves with. The boy was pronounced dead on the scene with, quote, "The victim appeared to be extremely malnourished, and there was evidence of abuse," end quote, police later wrote of the situation. An autopsy would confirm that Timothy died of malnourishment, weighing only 69 pounds, and hypothermia. 2 days later, Shitface Shanda is arrested for open murder and child abuse. And then 19-year-old Paul, who remember is an adult, Paul Ferguson, is arrested on first-degree child abuse.
In the state of Michigan, when you arrest somebody for open murder, I like to use that charge in murder cases because the jury instruction allows the jury to determine the degree of murder.
Mm-hmm.
So open murder is just that. It's open as to the degree, and the jury may decide.
Wonderful. We say this all the time. You can't see my notes, but I literally put a statement in here of, Megan, will you explain why it's open murder and not first degree murder?
That's amazing.
Thank you, friend. I just felt
inclined to explain.
Okay. Yes, because they do enter the degree later. And so I did want to explain why it's different in the beginning. So thank you. The trial was not held until December 2023. So more than a year, it's like a year and a half after Timothy.
That is not bad timing. Not at all. I'm going to be honest.
I was pretty shocked myself, especially when you consider all the mental health assessments that would have to take place for, beforehand.
And stalling both defense and prosecutorial tactics.
Absolutely. And, yeah. Yep.
Experts are hard to nail down, hard to get to take time away from their vacations and actual medical practices to come in. And yeah, it can be a train wreck.
Now, Paul Ferguson, by the time the December 2023 trial comes along, he had made a plea deal to plead guilty to first degree child abuse in exchange for testimony against his mother. All right. So we're going to talk about Shanda's trial. And it will give us all of the details that we may or may not really want to know of what this child went through. The trial began with the detectives reading 80 pages of text conversations between Shanda and her son, Paul. According to Paul, Timothy was forced to live in a small closet in their basement. A detective showed pictures of the closet to the court, indicating that the only objects in it were a blue tarp and an Amazon box. Police said that the room had an overwhelming odor of urine and feces. Paul testified that handcuffs and zip ties were used to restrict Timothy's movement, while cameras and motion sensors were used to monitor him both in the closet and in the bathroom. Now, Shanda later says that those motion detectors were also for the 7-year-old that was in the house as well. Shanda and Paul often discussed ways to keep Timothy uncomfortable in these text messages, like forcing him to stand facing a wall for hours at a time or doing wall sits. Timothy was punished by being fed Carolina Reaper hot sauce, either on pieces of bread or poured directly into his mouth, which Paul admitted to doing to his younger brother. And here's some statements directly from the court transcripts. The prosecutor said to Paul, "Did you notice that he was getting really thin?" Paul says, "Yes." The prosecutor says, "Did you say anything to your mom about that?" Paul says, "I did, yes." Prosecutor, "What did you tell her? What did you try to do?" Paul said, "I took pictures of it and I sent them to her and told her that I wouldn't say that I said to stop, but I was trying to hint at it." Now, you're having a text message conversation. You can be pretty clear in a text message.
Like, maybe we should feed Timothy. Mm-hmm. You can see all his bones.
Yeah.
So he's downstairs in zip ties, wrapped up in a blue tarp to keep warm, literally in the closet under the stairs like Harry Potter.
Right. Maybe I don't want to pour hot sauce down his throat anymore.
Right.
So the prosecutor says, when he said, "But I was trying to hint at it," the prosecutor said, "To stop what?" And Paul said, "To stop feeding him so horribly, give him something nutritional, give him what he needed. He didn't deserve this." Well, you're goddamn right he didn't deserve this, Paul.
Well, it was an honest-ish statement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an absolute true statement. He didn't deserve this. You're right. Now, whether you recognize that in truth or not, that's yet to be seen. Paul also testified that he occasionally placed Timothy in a bathtub of cold water, including the day before he died, for more than 9 hours at a time.
This is the hypothermia.
It is. Yep. Texts revealed that Timothy was also forced at times to run up and down stairs while Paul chased him. All of this, Paul says, was per his mother's orders. He cited low self-esteem that made him want to make his mom proud, and he described the situation as being that of Stockholm Syndrome. But he wasn't forced to stay there. Let's keep that in mind.
Paul wasn't a prisoner.
Paul was not a prisoner, and that's why I think it is different than Stockholm Syndrome.
It doesn't even fall in the definition of Stockholm Syndrome. There may be other things it falls under. He may have untreated child trauma, PTSD. Oh, frankly, the same things that she was indicating that she had.
I can't remember if we covered this. I know it was recently, it was last month, but was it a general episode or was it a bonus episode? But I went into great lengths to describe, I think it was a bonus episode.
I think it was.
To describe the qualifications for Stockholm Syndrome.
This ain't it.
This is not it. You have to meet three of the four classifications for Stockholm Syndrome, and this doesn't even meet one of them.
No, agreed.
And I also drew the parallel between his mother's argument and the similarities with Paul's as well. I agree there. So Paul said, and I quote, "I desired to find a role model that, due to my own low self-esteem, I would do anything to make them proud of me. That's not an excuse, I know, but I feel like I'm glad I was at least able to recognize it so that I could correct it." Recognize it after your brother died, after he did all of these horrible things.
Or immediately before, when he sent a vague text message.
He did. Mm-hmm. The day before his death, Paul said that Timothy was unresponsive in the morning and asked Shanda, god damn.
Just say the other thing first and you get it right
every
time.
I do. I have to add the shit face in there. Anyway, you know, that woman. He asked his mother, he said that, you know, he texted his mom and said, "Hey, Timothy is unresponsive." And his mother said to use a painful method to wake him up. So the prosecutor, I'm going to read from you some more transcripts. The prosecutor said in response to this, "Was your mother giving you instructions on what to do with him while he was in that tub at that point in time?" Because the day before Timothy was found dead, he testified that he placed him in an ice-cold bathtub for 9 hours.
Yes.
All right? So Paul said, "Yes, sir." And the prosecutor said, "What was she telling you to do?" And Paul said, "Make him uncomfortable." And at one point, she had me heat up a pizza roll to see if he would be responsive to enticement. I held it close, and when he responded, as per instruction, I was to pull it away from him.
Yeah.
So just this starving boy, just tease him in this ice-cold bathtub with food. Okay. So the prosecutor says, "You recall while Timothy was on the tub, an exchange where your mother inquired about pouring hot sauce on his private parts." Paul said, "Yes, I do." Prosecutor said, "Did you do that?" Paul said, "No, that was beyond." And then he pauses and says, "As everything else was." Yeah, so that's where you draw the line? Pouring the hot sauce on his private parts.
I think he recognized that what his answer was going to be was bullshit, knowing when what he had already done.
Well, that was beyond torture to pour hot sauce on his privates, but nothing else that I had done was.
I actually think that that's probably true for him. It may have been too much for him to do to pour hot sauce on a penis. Mm-hmm. The rest of it he could separate himself from, but sharing the same genitals, perhaps that was just too much for him. Mm-hmm. Perhaps. People who commit the worst of tortures sometimes draw a line someplace. Mm-hmm. And I'm not being sarcastic. I think that was his line.
Mm-hmm. Pictures of the scene were admitted into evidence that showed Timothy deceased on the floor in the basement of the house. Those poor jury members, by the way. The photos were also...
Shanda was pretty upset about it too, wasn't she?
Yeah, we'll get to that. We'll get to her displays.
Yeah.
The photos also showed locks that were kept on the refrigerator and freezer and the alarms on the closet door. Paul frequently expressed frustration with Timothy in text message, and in one text said, "I'm ready to kill Timothy." The text messages between mother and son accused Timothy of faking his behavior. Those familiar with the family said that Timothy is believed to have had special needs, but Shanda often asked her son Paul via text to throw ice-cold water on Timothy and to feed him bread with hot sauce. Paul said, "I ended up dragging him back into his small room because I wasn't going to risk having him access to the tub or things overnight," said one of the texts. "He's still trying to be stupid, but I will tell you more tomorrow while I take you to work," describing how many different ways I can prove that he is faking. "He's still doing it, though. It's beyond ridiculous." Now, that was a text message from Timothy's mom, shit-faced Shanda, to Paul.
To her other son.
To her other son. Of just like, I'm going to tell you all the ways that he is, you know, being ridiculous and faking this. She did her best to convince Paul that Timothy was bad. We see this. This is the, you know, this is how you.
The evil child.
Yes.
How you have to help me.
Mm-hmm, you completely manipulate the other family members to turn that, isolate that one particular child and make them the brunt of everybody's abuse. Make them the black sheep. And she did that kind of textbook way, actually. Now, Timothy was allegedly still alive just before midnight on July 5th, according to the text messages where the two are talking back and forth and he's clearly still making utterances and things like that. But police were called to the house the following day. And if you recall, I did say a 911 call came in at 6:37 a.m. So sometime between midnight when those last messages were sent and 6:37, he is discovered to be deceased.
Right.
Prosecutors said to the jury, this is not somebody who doesn't have the intellectual capability to properly care for their child. She has that ability and she chose to essentially torture this child to death. Now, they also let the jury be very clear that at the time of his death, Timothy had only had bread and hot sauce. That's all he had been given. Paul claimed that on the morning Timothy was found dead, he attempted to resuscitate him for 18 minutes before they called 911. And then his mother told him to lie to the police and say that Timothy had been on a hunger strike.
Yes.
That's disgusting.
Right. He was zip tied under the stairs in a basement, wrapped up in a tarp. And he was on a hunger strike.
And there were locks on the fridge and freezer, but he was on a hunger strike.
I don't think anybody, I bet you not one person on that jury had any issues disbelieving that statement.
Absolutely.
But she had to come up with something because shit, he actually died while we were torturing him. And now you got to call it in. Yeah. Somebody's going to find out and we got to come up with it.
Yep.
We got to come up with something.
Paul did initially go with the lie before later confessing to the full truth to the investigators.
Mm-hmm. Once he was under arrest.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I mean, he did when he did initially lie.
We call this the progressive truth, you all. And it usually you become progressively more truthful when you have no choice but to be.
Right. Yeah. Like, oh, sorry. I guess you got me. Yeah.
Well, the jig is up.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
So Shanda did take the stand in this trial. She claimed to not remember texting Paul the day before Timothy's death, instructing him to possibly feed him pizza rolls and tease him with them, okay?
Like she thought that was funny or no big deal?
Yeah, she doesn't remember sending that text. And so the prosecutors went ahead and read them for her.
To her,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I love that.
Yes, to her. It said, and this is a direct quote, "Tell him if he actually sits up by himself and stays sitting up, he'll get some pizza rolls. Don't tell him it's only two, and I'm okay if they're frozen rather than cooked."
He couldn't sit up, you dumb shit.
Right, exactly.
Because he weighed 65 pounds, you starved him, he was malnourished, and you have him in freezing water. Mm-hmm. He couldn't sit up. Mm-mm. He was emaciated. So this is the conversation she's having about him faking it. Yes, he was faking dying, Shanda. That's what he was doing.
Exactly. So this text that she sent that they read back to her actually stood in contrast to her testimony that they had already gotten from her, that she locked up the fridge and freezer and pantry, not for abuse of Timothy, but to stop him from inappropriately sneaking food, saying that there was a situation once where he ate a whole bag of frozen chicken. Now, Megan, it's not real frozen chicken. Her quote was, "I had just purchased a 2-pound bag of chicken nuggets, put it in the freezer, and I guess he got around the motion dispensers. He ate them. And he didn't cook them. He ate all of them." Okay, chicken nuggets are already cooked.
First of all, if a child is eating frozen food like that, it's because he had to escape sneak into the food and hide someplace to eat frozen chicken nuggets. Okay. You really think if he stood there, and all 65 pounds of them, and cooked them in the oven or the microwave, they would have let him?
No.
No jury is going to believe this bitch.
No, not at all. Not at all. But then to say, oh, I had to lock it up to protect him. Look, he ate frozen chicken. He didn't even cook it. It doesn't matter. That shows you the lengths at which he was going. Please say more, ma'am.
But she is believing her own statements because these are the parents that we see who are so ingrained in the abuse and neglect that they're perpetrating that they literally see these attempts from a starving child to get food in any way possible as them misbehaving. Always. Then they're bad. Always. They did another bad thing.
Yes.
Cannot process in her brain, and she is intelligent, which I'm assuming you'll get to.
Oh, I will get to it.
That this kid is acting out of fight, flight, or fright.
Yes.
He's not being naughty.
No. But how many times have we seen that in these abuse cases?
All the time.
Any behavior that a child is doing out of survival mode, out of their will to want to live, is then taken as an act of defiance against the parent or the caregiver, and it must be punished.
Right, and that's the clincher right there. It results in additional punishment.
Yep.
Not discipline.
Yep.
Not a conversation about why mommy keeps the fridge locked for your safety. Can you imagine locking a fridge unless you were directly ordered to by CPS or somebody because you had a child maybe that would gorge themselves to the point where they would vomit? And mm-hmm. there are certain times. I'm not going to say it's never appropriate, but it better be under a doctor's and a social worker's, a counselor's order that you're locking
and
food
and supervision.
Up.
Absolutely.
I know people who have adopted children who are traumatized like he would have been had he survived, where they literally keep snacks and food on the table at all times, like a grazing table, so they learn that they have access to food and stop hoarding type behaviors.
Yes.
So he doesn't have to hoard a dino nuggets in his in the basement.
It helps him feel safe.
Yeah, to eat their tails off because it's the only food he's getting.
It truly helps to deconstruct that survivalist programming that they get, that trauma has situations like this, gets people stuck in, right? Like, it is hard to turn that off. And so there are appropriate parameters that can be put in place, right? By people with pure loving intentions to see no harm.
Absolutely.
To this child. This was not the case. Now, the prosecutors, obviously in this case, Megan, are adamant that she needs to be held legally responsible for the death of her son. But the defense is saying, no, she never intended to hurt Timothy. Well, I'm sorry, but that to me is not a defense. What your intention was doesn't determine what the outcome is. And so,
well, intention can also be inferred. Intention doesn't have to be her admitting that she intends to cause death.
Right.
The act can be so abusive and so neglectful that a reasonable person would conclude what the result would be.
As it is. Yes, absolutely. There were, now, she also, I think, in my opinion, just made things worse for her on the stand because she said, quote, there were a couple of situations when Tim actually intentionally kept everyone in the house awake. He would intentionally set off the motion detectors and he would make noise, end quote. Oh, really? Heaven forbid a 15-year-old make noise. And her, those statements right there show, oh, he would intentionally set off the motion detectors to keep me awake. Everything is about him. She's the victim here. It is him doing things to her. So I love that the defense does an excellent job of dispelling her claims that she was not thinking clearly and unable to function properly. And Megan, you already know this, but for the general public here, are you ready for a freaking truth bomb?
Yes, give it.
Oh, Miss Shitface Shanda was in the process of becoming a fucking attorney.
Yes, ma'am.
When she was arrested for murder.
She was in law school.
She passed the bar on her first try.
She did.
And if I understand, Megan, that's not an easy test.
It is not.
So, ma'am, you saying that you aren't thinking clearly, you're not able to function properly, boy, you just don't know what way is up. That doesn't work here.
It bothers me that someone that smart who clearly knows at least the basics of criminal law, couldn't infer that her behavior itself in the neglect and abuse of her child could be considered active premeditation toward death.
I think, Megan, that her ego made her feel invincible because she had that knowledge. She, I think, thought she would, if anything bad were to come of this, she could confidently get her way out of it and people would believe her.
Yeah.
Because he's on a hunger strike. What could I do? I couldn't force him to eat. They're not going to check in for me because, you know, she was clerking for a judge at the same Muskegon County courthouse that her trial was held at. Now, obviously, the judge who was her boss had to, excuse himself.
Absolutely. But, he recused himself. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that, first of all, it would have happened anyway. But
yes.
I think he probably has received a lot of flack for not having some type of knowledge, but you don't always know everything about your interns. That's for damn sure.
I don't know what my staff are doing right now while we record this. It's after work hours. I have no idea.
But I do recall that a lot of these texts being sent are when she was at work.
Yes.
She's literally clerking for the criminal justice system, for the legal system, while she is authorizing continued abuse of her child, which led to his death.
Yep.
It's sick.
Yep.
My stomach just tightens.
Humans are notoriously hypocritical.
Oh, yeah.
And we're pretty famous for that.
We are.
Everyone that we cover on this podcast has some personality flaws.
Oh, as do I.
Right, but I am hoping not ever to this degree.
No, I don't think so.
This is just, it's always funny to me when you hear stories about people in any profession that then are going and doing something that is just so in complete opposition of their profession.
Yeah.
I'm just like, really? Why? But I think part of it is just like, oh, I know the ins and outs. I'm untouchable. She just, I can't, this woman, I don't even like the look of her face.
You know?
Like she, and I'm not body shaming anybody or anything.
No, that's not it.
Like that.
Go look at her.
Her soul is ugly.
Go look at photographs of her where I honestly feel like there's this level of soullessness. Mm-hmm. And emptiness, and then to listen to her talk, although I know you're going to get to some of her terrible emotional outbursts soon, but she doesn't have any empathy here.
No.
She doesn't seem to be sorry in any way, shape, or form for what she did. And more importantly, I don't think she recognized it while she was doing it because she justified it in her own mind years ago.
She did, yeah. But truly, when you look at her, it is ugly. And I don't mean that on the surface level of beauty or not. I'm talking like you look at her and you're like, oh, there is something wrong here.
You want to know what bothers me a little bit? You said she'd pass the bar.
Yeah.
Well, when you pass the bar, you do go through an application for character and fitness.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Correct. And you have to pass the MPRE first, which is the Michigan Professional Rules or Model Professional Rules of Ethics.
Oh.
So I can see where she could pass the ethics exam because anybody who's relatively, you know, smart or who can memorize can pass it real quick. But I'm a little concerned about the fitness and character portion of the bar and maybe how much research we do or don't do based off what they report. She clearly had a neglect and abuse case out of state where children were removed from her.
I was going to ask care. You about that. Okay.
And I don't know if that. It was not documented as a neglect and abuse, but documented under a divorce and custody.
I think it was documented under divorce and custody.
Okay, then I might have just answered my own question. Yes. Because if it was done through divorce and custody, it could appear when looking it up, unless you dug real deep, that it was just a custody decision that was made. And not every person who's an attorney has custody of their kids, or maybe their spouse has full and they have weekends, whatever.
Right.
You know, you may still pass.
And also, just having complaints called in and having a CPS history is not indicative of how you are as a person either. Anyone can call in on anyone else. And so,
but was she on some type of central registry? I guess that would be interesting. And I don't even know if the State Bar of Michigan, that's not my job. I don't know if they check. Do they check new attorneys applying for membership to the bar?
And does Oklahoma have?
And do they have a check? You're
right. A central registry? Because not every state does.
For those of you that don't know what a central registry is, since apparently not all states have them. We're not talking like sex offender registry. In Michigan, and I know a number of other states, central registry is a list that is kept. It's not public.
Nope.
But Charnel could look it up because of her licensing daycares and such, where if you have a substantiated case for a neglect and abuse, you go on this list. Mm-hmm. Now you can appeal to come off. Mm-hmm. I think it's after a certain amount of time. If the case is unsubstantiated, your name shouldn't be on there to begin with, but you are given notice when your name is on there.
Yep.
And it should bar you from certain types of employment.
Yes. Any employment to do with the handling of children.
Right.
You know, so, and you, not any, just anybody can access that list. You have to justify, and like you sign, when you look somebody up, you're signing, you know, a legal statement saying why you are doing that search. So whether it's for employment purposes or, you know, doing an investigation to determine if someone is appropriate to be hired somewhere, things like that.
So I have a great example of that is that when I served on the child death review team here in Hillsdale County, and then subsequently I've served for obviously like 20 years on child abuse prevention and awareness, which is a nonprofit. We had to fill out a form and take it to the DHHS to have them confirm that I wasn't on central registry. Because of course, if I had had a case of, you know, against me, then I couldn't have served on that board.
No.
Right. So exactly. Again, I had concerns about that when I read, like almost unbelievingly, that she had passed the bar and she had been working in a legal position.
Well, that, I'm so glad that you had that conversation, because I was going to ask you, how does that, but I'll say this, you guys, sometimes states, their systems don't talk to one another. And so if you don't actively reach out, we don't know. Did she disclose that she used to live in Oklahoma?
She may not have disclosed any of it.
Exactly.
I mean, you're swearing to tell the truth. Right. So hopefully she's also, as she's serving a sentence that you will get to, I hope she's disbarred. First of all, she will be, by the way. You have to report your convictions every year. And I feel like some type of murdery thing's a big one.
They probably frown upon that.
Yeah, they do. They do. They frown upon a disorderly person.
Yeah.
And that could happen to anyone.
But I know. I've met a lot of disorderly people, actually. Right. Listen, sometimes one would argue me in the morning is a disorderly person.
I'm preparing my defense to the bar on a daily basis for when I act disorderly at some point in time in the future. But I've been working on that.
Good job. But yeah, so I am glad that you really brought that up, because I wondered, but did want to throw that caveat in there too, that sometimes it is really difficult to get systems to talk to different states as well. Another little fun fact while we're on her history, she struggled to maintain blood sugar levels. So she used a Great Dane as a service dog. And
my sister has Great Danes, and I don't feel like they're good service dogs.
Listen, I've seen a lot of service dogs that I don't feel like are great service dogs.
I mean, Sully and Stella are sweethearts, but they would trip you and make you fall before they got Maybe you an orange.
She might have rode them into work. I don't know.
I think some dogs are trained to, if your sugar's getting low, they'll like lay down or get really close to you.
Yeah, I didn't.
And apparently a Great Dane knocking her over would let her know
your sugar's
it.
Low.
She's not a large woman either.
No, she's not. But the irony of all
this. I didn't know that.
She got herself a service dog, okay? She also would create and post YouTube videos about her dog and their daily activities.
Oh my God. I know a lot of you love your fur babies. And I love mine. And Charnel loves hers more than most, okay?
Oh, yeah. It's unhealthy, people.
But if you have chosen to give life to children, there is never a world where you get to love your dogs more than your children.
Thank you.
Or treat them better than your children. Better. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. By December of 2023, when this trial was taking place, she had 380 subscribers to her channel. Her last video was posted on March 18th, 2021, about 4 months before Timothy died.
Well, I hope her dog doesn't steal food.
Well, that's just it. She was clearly feeding her dog, Megan. Because, you know, it was providing a service for her. It was her service dog. She got to take him to work. She definitely loved that dog far more than she did her child.
The dog was treated like her child, and her child was treated like an animal. And not a good animal. No. Like a caged
zoo animal. Like how we don't want animals to be treated. Yes.
Like the tiger.
So, during cross-examination, the Muskegon County's chief trial attorney, Matt Roberts, asked Shanda, why are you able to accommodate your own health problems and not Timothy's. How could you not know that he was that bad? And that's just it. You can't. She says, and I quote, "Honestly, I was just barely functioning. I missed a lot. I hate it because I feel like a complete failure." As you are. What tipped you off to your level of failing here, ma'am?
Well, she failed to continue to keep him alive.
She did. She failed to appropriately to be able to lie about it to the degree where people would actually buy it. Yeah. Thank God.
I think that she was so narcissistic and confident that she believed people would believe her story. But I think that a lot of this is going to come down to you guys deciding, as a jury will make a decision, did she intend for him to die or not? And I know that's a big piece of this.
Well, that was the next question. Was this outcome expected by you? And she responded, absolutely not, no. But I'm sorry. What do you expect is going to happen from an emaciated child of 15, a boy?
15 and 65.
69
pounds. 69 pounds. Keep this in mind.
Yes. Like, I am sorry, and you're only feeding him bread and hot sauce and making him sit in cold baths for hours a day. How, in your reasonable mind, how do you think that that's not going to eventually lead to death?
You know, let me also note that torture in the state of Michigan is also an offense punishable by up to life in prison. Mm-hmm. So is first degree child abuse causing death and first degree homicide.
Yep. The prosecution, not the defense attorney, the prosecution says, read her text messages and wanted to know on cross-examination about this. The text message that read, quote, "I wonder how it would feel to have that hot sauce on your private parts. I'm not saying touch him there, not at all, but dripping a little bit there, is that horrible?" So Matt Roberts is like the... Prosecutor confronted her and was like, "So this just popped into your head. I wonder what hot sauce on your private parts would be like." And she,
next question, which would almost presume definitely get me in trouble with the judge, but you guys have to remember I was a prosecutor, would be, "And did that make you sexually aroused? Is that why you
How
wanted
some? How far depraved are we going here?"
Well, might as well add a criminal sexual conduct in there if I made somebody commit a CSC on him by an inappropriate touching, if it was for my sexual purpose, her sexual purpose.
Wait, why are you even thinking about your 15-year-old's private parts?
His genitals?
Right.
Because she wanted to hurt him.
Mm-hmm. And that's a sensitive area. She just replied back with, "I have no idea."
Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't know why.
Mm-hmm. I have no idea why that popped into my head.
Because you wanted to hurt him, Chanda. Because you wanted to hurt your child.
So remember how I told you about the cameras and the motion sensors?
Yes, you did.
Well, the thing about cameras and motion sensors is that they record.
It is weird how they do that sometimes.
I will say I really appreciated that Judge Matthew Cassell, in this case,
did... I think he pronounces his name Castle.
Probably.
Yeah, I'm a judge from Michigan. I don't know that judge Castle. Personally.
It's
but,
K-A-C-E-L.
Yep.
So, yep.
Maybe it's Cassell. I don't know.
Matthew, I can get that one right.
Judge Matt.
If me, of all people, can't say the name Matthew,
cool
I'm really
Cool Circuit Court
screwed.
Judge Matt.
Yes,
who
yes.
makes really great findings.
So Judge Matt here, he actually did decide that showing the footage of Timothy's final moments to the jury was prejudicial. Okay. So he did not do that.
I don't disagree. Yep. I know that some of you might not like that, but you have to weigh the substantive value over the prejudicial effect. Yep. And given the other evidence that had already been submitted, he may have decided that might be over the top.
It is. We don't need it.
But I can see a prosecutorial argument saying, but this is what she caused.
Mm-hmm. Well, he did let Lieutenant Joel Hoxima describe it to the court because he had reviewed.
You want to know how to pronounce a good Dutch name?
But how?
Hoxma.
Yeah, that actually makes more sense than what I said.
Yeah, Van der Ark's actually Dutch too.
Hoxima.
I went to college over there. Hoxma. I know them Dutch names. Hoxma.
Yeah, it's spelled Ho K
S M A
S E S E M A
S E M A. Hoxma.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Either way, Joel, good old Joel, he had to describe what these cameras caught for Timothy's final moments. Okay. In the footage, he described how shitface Chandra had dragged Timothy, who was apparently wearing an adult diaper at the time.
Oh, God.
Into the closet. His eyes were open, but he appeared very lethargic in his and unresponsive. Like, his eyes were open, but he was not all
there.
He wasn't
there.
Okay. He described very thin, protruding bones. He said, in particular, he wasn't wearing any pants, so I could see his hip bones and his knee joints very prominently displayed as she positioned him in front of the camera. Then she proceeded to berate Timothy. He said, and I quote, I could hear Miss Vander Ark tell Timothy he is pathetic and then say, but I already knew that. Then she drags him in and she also makes a comment about him owning, about him owing her the biggest apology in the world. She stepped out.
For what?
Who the fuck knows?
I know nothing. For existing. I want to know what in her sick mind she was owed an apology for.
Because he wouldn't sit up and just.
That's what I wonder.
Right.
Is it because he was quote unquote faking it?
Because he was dying from hypothermia from the 9 hours the day before that he had spent in the cold, you know, starving to death.
His poor little brain had already gone into a different place to survive.
For sure. I think, I like to think as a spiritual woman that by this time, his soul had actually left. Because there are a lot of case studies that actually show before death, we do leave our physical body.
Especially so violent ones.
Yes. No, 100%. All these case studies are from violent and traumatic deaths. And yes, they do. They do describe how you leave your body. Mm-hmm. Anywho. So he continues to describe how Timothy was taking short, shallow breaths through his mouth, and kind of like how a fish out of water would breathe. She clamps on his mouth to shut his mouth, and tells him he doesn't need to breathe like that. And holds his mouth shut for a period of time.
Death breathing?
Uh-huh.
She's holding his mouth shut while he's death breathing.
Telling him that he doesn't need to breathe like that.
No, he doesn't need to breathe at all anymore, Chanda.
Yep. Well,
mission accomplished.
And she tells him, quote, see, you didn't need to breathe through your mouth like that. You're being a dummy. End quote. So then there was moments in the video he described for the jury at the point in time which he believed that Timothy was no longer alive because his chest had stopped moving. Authorities said that after finding Timothy unresponsive on the video camera, it took Shitface Shanda and Paul Ferguson 18 minutes to call 911, the same amount of time that they said that Paul was administering CPR. But the cameras proved otherwise.
When did they wrap him in the tarp?
He was wrapped in the tarp as if it was like a blanket.
I know. But when she dragged him onto the tarp. Okay. Yeah. Then kind of wrapped him up in it.
I think she wrapped him after he was already
dead.
Gone. Mm-hmm.
I don't even know how to begin to explain how horrifying that is and how much I would have harped on that also as an attorney, that your child is dead and you're taking your 18 minutes to call. But you take the time to wrap him up in a blue tarp. You don't even try to take your baby and wrap him up in a blanket.
This isn't a baby to her. This isn't her baby to her. She's so disattached to this child. And could it be from the fact... Listen, just because Oklahoma was involved from 2009 to 2012, CPS... At that time, he's, what, six?
Yeah.
So, you know, four to six... Between the ages of four and... Well, three and six, right? God only knows what this child went through.
So how many years was he actually in her custody? Was there
2001 he moved in 2001 and then died in 2022.
Do we know when the torture began? When she started to actually...
She claims that it was after Adam. So Adam moved out January 2022 because of his stroke that he had.
Oh.
And she claims that he started to...
Okay, so he must have gone to an assisted living or something?
No, he went to live with his parents in West Olive.
So they could take care of him because apparently of his stroke. She couldn't?
Nope. No, she can. She's got her service dog and she's got her special needs child.
Doesn't anyone think that's weird, too?
I did think that was weird, guys.
We didn't talk about it when you mentioned it, but I find it strange that... So you have a special needs child and you have some issues as well. Your husband's had a stroke, but you love him and he's your husband. Why don't you bring care there? I wonder if he knew what there was some shit going on in the home before.
Yes, and I wonder if the parents knew and knew that wasn't a safe environment for their medically fragile adult son.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Agree completely.
And we can't ask him because unfortunately he went to be with Jesus.
He did. He did. He passed away from leukemia is what I consistently read.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to say anything negative about him. I don't know the man and I have no reason to. So well, I don't mean to throw shade at this poor fella at all. I'm just wondering.
They didn't live together for a long period of time because it was 2021, I think August, something like that. That Timothy came to live with them, and then he had late 2021, very early 2022, had that stroke that left him wheelchair bound, and he moved with his mom. So there was not a lot of overlapping, and with him, with whatever medical stuff he had going on, he may have not known the extent of things. I truly think that the bulk of this abuse for Timothy and where it escalated and got so serious where he's sleeping in the basement and Paul is doing all these horrible things to him at Shanda's request, it was 100% well after Adam had left. But she herself also says she thinks that it was Adam's departure from the home and stroke that caused Timothy's behavior problems. But I want to point this out. Timothy didn't have a whole lot of time to bond with Adam. Okay, not enough to derail him into PTSD from him leaving.
No, okay? It derailed her.
It did. It absolutely did. But again, we are nothing but mirrors, right? People like this, they just want to project out what their most inner problems are onto other people. So when it came time for the jury to read the verdict, this is where Shanda gets very emotional. Very disruptive. She vomits on the stand.
I thought she vomited when they showed her pictures of her emaciated child. Or she felt nauseous and had to leave or something.
Yeah, it wasn't. I don't know that piece.
I think that at some point she had a reaction when they showed the photos of him. See, they didn't play that video. They did show photos of him to the jury.
They did.
In open court.
Yes.
Maybe they closed it. You know, I don't know. I can't say that to be sure, and I don't want to be incorrect. But they showed it to the jury at least.
Yes, the jury saw it.
And she did have some type of a reaction then, too. I don't know if she just got nauseous or had to leave or started crying or pretended to, you know, like she was going to vomit or not. But she did actually vomit when the jury came back.
She did. And so they excused her. So she was not present, as you do not have to legally be, while they read the verdict.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So
don't worry, she was in custody.
She was, yeah. January 2024, she was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole.
What was their sentence?
It was first degree murder.
Murder in the first degree.
It was.
They were able to find premeditation then, and I want to let you know how significant that is, because this woman's going to appeal. Mm-hmm. She's going to appeal based off of the degrees specifically. I'm sure she would have loved a second degree. I bet they requested a potential jury instruction for manslaughter too. First degree premeditated murder means the jury was able to find in that open murder charge that she caused the death of her child. That is, her child, Timothy, died as a result of her causing the death, her act causing the death. Second, and this is the important part, that the defendant intended to kill Timothy. Third, that this intent to kill was premeditated. That is, thought out beforehand. You guys, two and three there are significant for the jury to have found. And fourth is the description that means, premeditation means, the killing was deliberate, which means that the defendant considered the pros and cons of the killing and thought about and chose her actions before she did it. There must have been a real and substantial reflection for long enough to give a reasonable person a chance to think twice about the intent to kill. The law does not say how much time is needed. It is for you to decide if enough time passed under the circumstances of this case. The killing cannot be a result of a sudden impulse without thought or reflection. And five, they must find that the killing was not justified, excused, or done under circumstances that reduce it to a lesser crime. Mm-hmm. Second degree murder is a lesser included offense of first degree murder, and she could have been found guilty of that. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to read the actual criminal jury instruction for first degree premeditated murder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that that's huge. And I agree. I think she will. I think she will appeal because it was her giving the instruction to Paul, and Paul was really the catalyst, right, of the hypothermia, of the starvation. I mean, she took place in his starvation as well because she was home. When she wasn't at work, she testified that, you know, because she worked, Timothy was under the care of Paul. But the whole time, they're texting that whole time, and she's giving very specific instructions of how to torture him, how to withhold food from him, what to feed him when she did, bread and hot sauce.
Like I said,
Carolina
Charnel,
Reaper hot sauce, right? Not just, that we're not talking Frank's hot sauce.
I like hot sauce and have been known to take some and just, you know, randomly put a little drop on my tongue to be a big hero. It ain't fun.
It's not.
But I did. I committed the torture to myself, usually for others' entertainment. And I think this was for her entertainment.
It was. I agree.
Whatever she has to say, and I guess I don't know what the original charging document said, how many different things she was charged with, if there was it was possible to charge her with other things as well.
The only thing I found was the murder open and the murder, child abuse.
Mm-hmm. Child abuse in the first degree. Did they find her guilty of that as well?
Yes.
Excellent. So that also carries life. Mm-hmm. They apparently didn't charge her with torture as a separate offense, but could have. But it's kind of included in there. Torture is also a life offense. Mm-hmm. False imprisonment.
I feel like they should have.
Yeah, I maybe overkill. Torture was included as in part of the first degree.
Both of these charges are already life sentences.
Yeah, we make charging decisions as attorneys, and then the judge, we just do our job and read the jury instructions.
Well, let me tell you what the judge said.
I would love to hear this.
It's interesting about the torture thing. He said, Judge Matt, probably Castle. I want it to be Castle, even though it's spelled K-A-C-E-L, because I think that's a cool.
I think it is.
It's like my maiden name that is so messed up, no one can ever get it. And I just, you know, when you say it to people, they're like, oh.
Irish, okay. Huh?
Yeah, right, right. He said, and I quote, "I've been trying now for this entire case to wrap my mind around how somebody could do something so horrific, not only to another human being, but to their own child. You intentionally and systematically tortured this child. Let's call it what it is. It's torture. You tortured this child. This wasn't punishment. You weren't trying to curb his behavior. You tortured him." End quote. Absolute. Right on, man.
Yeah. That's beautifully stated, because that is exactly what the jury had to have found happened in order to show that premeditation period. That premeditation that was necessary for the first degree murder. He kind of explained it in his findings. Mm-hmm.
She was also sentenced to additional 50 to 100 years for the first degree child abuse.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm. Which did exceed the sentencing guidelines at that time, but he said that it was justified by Timothy's long-term suffering.
Yeah, so what that means, and circuit court judges in the state of Michigan get used to doing this, is if you exceed the sentencing guidelines, you hand them their appellate paperwork when you sentence them, because they have an automatic right to appeal if you exceed sentencing guidelines. But we're okay with that as judges when we feel like we have justified exceeding them. And I have a lot of respect for judges that do that, as long as they articulate it within the law.
Mm-hmm. Prior to sentencing, I thought you all would like to know this, that Shanda appeared before the Muskegon County Circuit Judge Jenny McNeil for a trial on a petition to terminate her parental rights for the one remaining minor child in her care, who was placed with family, by the way. And so she did try to fight that.
What?
She did, because she wanted to still have decision-making capabilities from prison, and also because it would determine how it would force him to have to come and visit her.
Mm-hmm.
All right? It would, not to worry, her rights were terminated.
Yeah, so just so you guys know, and we've mentioned this once before, evidence of how one child is treated is used as how evidence of another child can be treated in the state of Michigan. And that would have been a case where they filed a petition and they probably requested, I know they did, requested termination immediately at the disposition.
Yes.
So an adjudication trial happens, not hard to get jurisdiction, which is just the court taking control because another child had died. Then at disposition, the court can make the decision to terminate, and they terminated based off of how she treated her other child. Yep.
Sure did.
Anticipatory neglect.
So now he doesn't have to go visit her if the family does not want to allow it. She has absolutely no decision-making capabilities, even from prison, for him. So, you know, golf clap for that. All right. February 26, 2024, Paul Ferguson was sentenced for his, I think I, in the beginning I said the 23rd, but it was the 26th. Okay. He was sentenced for his part in all this, and he asked the judge for mercy and fairness so that he could learn from what he did with what little dignity he had left.
If anyone had a mitigating circumstance that could have caused the judge to impose a lesser sentence, it's him.
Sure.
He's going to go with, and I know he did, the whole look at the monster that raised me. Look at what happened to me. Me. I'm so sorry my brother died, by the way.
Yeah, me. That sucks that he died, but like, yeah, look at the horrific things.
It happened because of her. Yeah. She made me do it.
Yes. Let me tell you about before issuing Paul's sentence, how Judge Castle said Paul appeared to be presenting a careful and manipulative story.
Oh, shit.
Since the beginning of the trial, including during his testimony against his mother, where he repeatedly said that he was following her orders. He said, and I quote,
Judge.
Mr. Ferguson, I think you are a product of your environment. But I don't believe you that you're sorry. I don't. I don't think you have empathy. I don't think you have any emotion whatsoever. That's what really scares me. I think you're sorry that you're here. I think you're sorry you got caught. I liked that he said that. He also addressed the argument that Paul was only following his mother's instructions, and that he wasn't to be blamed for Timothy's torture. And he said, quote, I think you're just as bad, if not worse. You could have gone to a neighbor and said, hey, my mom's abusing him. You could have grabbed him and got out of there. You could have done any number of things to stop this, and you chose not to. Your own brother. End quote. He expressed concerns that Paul would not get help during his time in prison and that he may present a danger to the public. He said the child abuse charge Paul faces does not take into consideration the long-sustained torture that Timothy experienced. At his own hand. At yeah. Paul's own hand. So, he said that he believed that his mother had used Paul to enact torture on Timothy because Paul was predisposed to torturing Timothy independent of his mother's orders. He said, quote, I think Mr. Ferguson walked through that door and was happy to be the enforcer, was happy to be and continued to torture his brother over and over and over and over until he was a shell of a person, he said, until he was dead. So, Judge Matt sentenced Paul 30 to 100 years in prison. He will receive a credit of 592 days for the time that he had already served.
Great.
So there it is. And I know that, there's going to be some people that have some feelings about that. We also didn't listen to Paul testify.
No.
I really think that I would have paid as a judge very close attention to how he acted when he testified.
While you're having feelings, I want to point something out. In the state of Michigan, judges at our level are elected. Mm-hmm. If you don't like what happened there, you don't reelect that judge.
Yeah.
Because he was rightfully convicted of the child abuse in the first degree because a death was called. And he pled guilty to it, you all. Okay. And he did that as a plea agreement. He could have been found guilty of actual murder.
Yes.
But he took a plea offer.
Yep.
He probably thought that with his clean criminal history and what would come up on sentencing guidelines, which we have in the state of Michigan, that would be followed and he maybe would have received what, like 20 or something? I don't know for sure what his guideline would have worked out to in my brain. I'm not going to math right now. I'm assuming he was a little bit shocked then when the judge exceeded his sentencing guidelines and instead used that where he could have received up to life anyway, by the way, but exceeds mm-hmm. sentencing guidelines to give him 30 to 100. The reason, and he can appeal it, but the reason I think something like that's going to stand up is the judge in this case was able to go through and explain very expressly and particularly why he was sentencing him how he was. He very clearly believes that he is a danger and a threat to society, that he's not rehabilitatable, at least during that particular time frame, you know, 100 years or so. And absent some type of crazy abuse of discretion or use of evidence in an appropriate way, these things are very hard to overturn. So again, be in your feelings. Feel some of you, if there's a couple of you out there that he shouldn't have had his sentence exceeded. But I'm just going to chalk this one up to all of the right verdicts, decisions, and statements in this case were made as far as I'm concerned mm-hmm. from a legal perspective.
I agree.
I'm pleased.
I agree. And as someone who has dedicated their life to child welfare, I agree. So he, and he pointed out very clearly, the child abuse charge did not take into consideration the long-sustained torture that you placed on Timothy, right? Like that,
I think sometimes when people plead guilty to the child abuse and they're like, okay, well, we'll dismiss the murder and the torture then, they think that you can't use those other events against them in their plea, and that is very, very untrue. Mm-hmm. We can use anything that's presented, especially in testimony.
Yeah. Yes.
And there was testimony in the other case as well as admissions that he made.
Yes.
So there we are.
Yes. So thank you all for recommending this case. We hope that we really did do the coverage justice as you so eloquently, all of you so eloquently said we would. So I even taught you a couple of things. So that was good. Even though you started researching.
Yeah. You always teach me something, dear.
But I have a very warm brain bath. We're going to take a warm bath. Let's get into a hot tub. It's so warm and fuzzy today.
Okay.
And it's from One Green Planet. I really wanted to give us a good brain bath that's going to make us just feel so great instead of like laughing at people's stupidity. But this is times when animals saved humans' lives.
Oh, you're really giving me some warm and fuzzy.
Oh, warm bath. I told you. Yes.
Last time it was a spit bath, remember?
Yes, I do. No elbow grease here. It's just a nice warm hot tub.
All right. So dipping my toe in.
In June 2005, a 12-year-old girl was snatched by four men in rural Southwest Ethiopia, and as she was like making her way home from school. A week after the kidnapping, her captors were attempting to move her. Sorry, I've lost my ability to read. With police in hot pursuit, and three lions chased the men off.
What?
Yeah, the lions.
Lions?
Yes, the lions remained with the terrified girl until police arrived to escort her to safety. She told them that although she had been beaten by her kidnappers, who it is believed had been attempting to sell her into a forced marriage.
Which is basically their way of saying human trafficking.
Yes, yep. The lions had not touched her. They stood guard until the police found her, and then they just left her like a gift and went back into the forest, not bothering the police, officers, anything. Ethiopian wildlife experts claim that lions may have spared the girl because her cries had sounded like the mewing of a cub.
They thought she was a kitten.
Isn't that so sweet?
They was protecting her.
Yes. And I have one more, and then we'll say goodbye, but I just, you know. Continue your bath here, please. Your warm bath. In late 2004, lifeguard Rob House and his family were out swimming at Ocean Beach in New Zealand when seven bottlenose dolphins approached and herded them together. They were behaving really weird, House said. You should see Megan right now.
Sorry, I made my guess at what was happening, and I think I was right. Go ahead.
You were, but you were doing a game of charades over here. Oh, gosh. So the dad is like, they were turning tight circles on us and slapping the water with their tails.
Dun, dun.
He and his daughter's friend, Helen, had drifted about 20 meters away from his daughter and another friend before a dolphin swam straight at them and dived back down into the water before them. I turned in the water to see where it was going to come up, the dad said. But instead, I saw this great big gray fish, later revealed to be a great white shark, swim around me. It glided in an arc and headed for the other two girls. My heart went into my mouth because one of them was my daughter. Also, just even if it's not your daughter, you don't want to see a human ate.
No,
by
I've
a
seen
shark.
Soul Surfer. You don't.
No, you don't. I know. I love that movie.
Oh my God. I watched it the other day and cried.
I just watched it the other day too. That's freaking bizarre.
That is bizarre.
The dolphins were going ballistic. The dolphins then herded the swimmers together and circled protectively around them for 40 minutes, fending off the shark. Isn't that amazing?
Do you know what I love about both of those stories?
What?
mammals were protecting other mammals. Mm-hmm. It didn't matter what genus or class we were. Well, maybe mammal is a genus. I'm not a scientist. No, but they were protecting. And I'm such a nerd. Have you been watching? I think when you look up enough things on your phone, it's memorizing your algorithms. But have you seen where the killer whales are just demolishing and killing great white sharks?
Yes,
and like eating their liver, like they're Hannibal Lecter of the sea.
Yes.
But they don't. I mean, I'm not saying they don't eat other mammals because I hear they just play with seals like they're, mm-hmm. I mean, it's not pretty.
No,
they're killers for a reason.
Yeah.
But killer whales are really just the largest member of the dolphin family. They're mm-hmm. not actually whales.
Right.
And so dolphins ganging up on a shark that is invading their territory and even potentially hurting other harmless mammals like us what would you call us? Piddly little humans?
Yes.
We don't have as much ridiculous brain activity as dolphins. No. We can't fucking swim.
We are unevolved flesh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, exactly. I love those
stories. The bottlenose dolphins are actually known for helping helpless things.
Yes.
I think that's amazing.
That's us as a species.
As I gave you a helpless case things. Where a mammal couldn't help another mammal that it had birthed,
yeah.
Here are some stories of... You know, not even from the same species, and they can help save the helpless. So there's hope out there.
Oh, thank
there
you.
Is hope. You know, when the human race dies off and this planet is just run by animals, it's going to be fantastic.
Dolphins and killer whales.
And apparently lions.
On Earth.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
On Earth.
You have, you know, land kittens and sea dogs.
Aww.
That's all that needs to be left.
That is all that needs to be
and
left.
And the earth will be green. And
butterflies. Can we leave continue. Butterflies?
I don't think we have a choice.
Yeah.
Because those two things actually don't fly. So I did forget about, you know,
things
butterflies and, you know, probably mosquitoes.
Well, and cockroaches, because we know. The earth won't even be here anymore. And somewhere the cockroach is going to be alive.
What
on
did
a
I read?
Someplace,
right. It'll be a Twinkie, a cockroach, and Keith Richards.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
And on that note, we hope that you guys keep it curious.
Keep listening.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.